When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If perfectionism is the part of us that's really trying to protect our anxiety, what are some of the ways in which this protector part is blocking them from, you know, probably inevitably at the end of the day, what they want is for their child to be happy and healthy and for them to be present with their kid.
But we can heal a little bit of that by healing ourselves moving forward with our with what we do for our kids. It doesn't, we don't have to be fully healed to do it better for them.
Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy, and I'm so glad you are tuning in today. In this episode, we are exploring the intersection of perfectionism, parenting, and feeding our children. To really help me dive deeper into this topic, I invited Megan of Feeding Littles, a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and a New York Times bestselling author, onto the podcast. Together, we explore how perfectionism often has roots in underlying anxiety, and then just the overall impact it can have when it comes to snacks and mealtime and packing lunches for our kids. Megan explains the concept of intuitive eating and how it applies to children, emphasizing the importance of allowing kids to trust their bodies and make choices about their hunger and their fullness. Without the rigid controls that sometimes come with perfectionism that can lead to disordered eating patterns later in life. The beautiful thing here and the path we're going to lay out is that you can be doing this personal work for yourself around perfectionism parallel to supporting your kids in building a healthy relationship with their bodies and with food. We're talking about many of the common struggles parents face when it comes to feeding their kids, such as dealing with picky eating, the pressures of packing school lunches, and the stress of meeting societal expectations. Megan offers practical advice on how to navigate these challenges while keeping mealtime enjoyable and stress-free. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Megan, thank you so much for coming on. I am so excited to pick your brain and just to get a chance to hang out with you. I love you. I love all of the content that you put out there. You have supported my family in the kitchen during mealtime, and you've just been such a huge support to me as a friend, and I'm just really thrilled to have you finally on the podcast.
Yay. Thank you for having me. I love your background, by the way. It's just so light and just a reflection. It's so sunny. It's just you.
Thank you. It is a sunny day here in San Diego, California.
Yeah, I guess people that are actually listening can't see that, but she just covered gorgeous, like, beautiful.
Aw, thanks. Well, I think that maybe what you're picking up in is, like, just the energy I have spending this time here connecting with you, because truly you have been such a supportive resource for our family. So I found you on social media when I was expecting our youngest, who's now four, and we went through, I know, wild, right? Like,
and I don't accept that.
I know, I don't accept that. And then I had her during COVID, and you really helped us when it came to introducing food to her and navigating our feeding journey with her. Because really with the first two, that we have a huge age gap between her and my oldest two. And, you know, I was still with my oldest two in what I call my like perfectionist recovery. I'm a recovering perfectionist. That part of me will always be there, and it still pops up from time to time. But feeding my two older children when they were small was an incredibly stressful experience for me. Everything from, am I picking out the right things, right? Like the right ingredients? Am I introducing the right first foods? Is this going to have this huge impact if it's not the right thing? I really struggled with mess and like letting them really like squish the food in their hands, and I'd watch it drip into their high chair and the crevices, and wanted to control the situation, and then would kind of do that actually, and then would feel shitty about it after, because I'm like, I'm like making this such a stressful experience for them. And it was that little spiral of shame. And then they started going to school, and I was asked to pack them lunches for school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, everything from even like related to like how we're spending meal time together. Are we all together? Like, are people fighting? Like, I want this to be a connecting experience. Like, are they going to eat any of this? Just so many ways that part of me would rob the joy and presence of feeding my children. And I, you know, did go to therapy. I'm a therapist. Yes, I go to therapy and worked through some of those things and really recognized that there were different reasons why food is a trigger. You know, I think food is one of those things where it feels like if everything else is out of control, maybe this is something that I can control. And so my perfectionism just latched on to that. And I really wanted to do it differently with my third. And your resources were such a huge support around that. And so I'll give you a chance now to introduce yourself, since I just blabbed about how much I love you for a little bit there. You introduce yourself, and then let's talk about the relationship between perfectionism and feeding our children.
Ooh, this is such a powerful topic. Okay, so I'm Megan McNamee. Thank you for that glowing introduction. And I love talking about this because it really relates back to our own relationship with food. And I think, I'll just briefly introduce, I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I started my career in private practice and working in the maternal child health world. I work for WIC. And I've always loved this group, this age range, even though my kids now are almost 9 and then 11, which is alarming. Wow. I have a middle schooler. What? I only identify as a toddler mom, so I'm not really sure how that happens. But
I have a 13-year-old. Like, what is happening?
Like, it's odd. Well, we haven't gotten any older, so I don't know how that happened. But what's crazy is I did a whole bunch of work in grad school to learn about and get certified in intuitive eating. And I really latched on to baby-led weaning and teaching parents about how to feed young kids. And I didn't necessarily put it together until multiple years in. And actually, it was the author of Intuitive Eating. Evelyn Tribbley, two authors. She's one of them. I love both of them, Evelyn and Elise. Evelyn's grandchild was a client of our courses. And Evelyn's daughter sent us a message and said, you know my mom, oh my gosh, she loves you so much. She knows why you identify with this. It's intuitive eating for babies. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly why I love teaching baby-led weaning or self-feeding. That's why I love talking about letting your kid decide how much to eat, because you're setting the stage for the rest of their life with food, and in that you're allowing them to be in control of what goes in their body.
Now, to trust their body, right?
To trust their body. And there's going to be immediately, there's somebody out there going, I haven't been doing that. I feel guilty, and they're ruined for life. They're not ruined for life. I promise. You can start today or tomorrow or whenever you're ready. They're not ruined for life. Here's the thing that's so cool about food. We get to practice eating every day. We don't have the option of not doing it. It's, you know, people will say things like, well, I wish I just didn't have to address it. I wish I didn't have to deal with the issue. Just like, you know, alcohol or drugs or something where I'm not implying that food is addictive. There's actually some really good science to show that it's not. It's necessary. Yeah. It's a necessary thing to eat, but you can't avoid it like you would do alcohol. It's not an abstinence thing where if you're having struggles with food, you're just like, well, I'm just not going to address that, or I'm not going to go near it. You have to eat every day.
Yeah.
And so if your relationship with food has been difficult, you kind of have to face it, not just in how you feed yourself, but then you have to face it in how you feed your kids.
Oh.
And I think what's really been challenging, so many people I talk to, I feel like almost everyone that grew up in the 80s and 90s has some sort of weirdness with food. We were given mm-hmm. some super messed up relationship with food, you know, models. Literally, that's all we saw. And actually, I love that it's coming to light on social media now. All these people are showing examples. Like, you wonder why we struggled? Look at all these ads we saw. Look at what we saw in America's Next Top Model. Look what we, you know, of course we're going to deal with issues with our bodies and food. But I think the cool opportunity we have now is to start to heal ourselves a little bit and to do it differently for our kids.
Mm.
That's like the best part of what I teach, is people that have these, you know, strained relationships with food, which I think so many of us do to some degree, but we can heal a little bit of that by healing ourselves moving forward with our, with what we do with our kids. We don't have to be fully healed to do it better for them.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, it can be a parallel process. And they can, and they get to experience the benefits of each other as we literally face both every single day with every single snack and meal.
There's food all the time. You know, they're eating lots of snacks. They're eating, I mean, even older kids, they're hungry a lot. And yeah, you get a chance to work on it. So just to kind of answer your question, I think it is really hard when you're a perfectionist to, we get so many messages that are very black and white about food. And it really even depends on what source you're looking at, who you're asking, because it can be, you know, when you talk to somebody, it's like, this food is good for you. Well, like, no, this food is good for you. Like, it's all over the place, to be honest.
And it really is.
It's really hard because it makes you feel like you're messing up if you're not doing it 100%.
So let's talk about perfectionism here, and let's define some terms here, right? And you know, I think there are so many beautiful ways of kind of understanding and exploring and defining perfectionism. But the way that I want to talk about it today is, it's a part of us. I think that it's really, underneath the mask of perfection is really anxiety. Like, if I was to really like externalize the part of me that's the perfectionist part, I would look behind that part of me and I would see my anxiety like curled up in a ball. And perfectionism is the protector part of me that gets up and says, you know what? Things here feel scary or unknown. I feel like there's some threats here. We're worried. So how about I take the reins, and maybe if we just do it perfectly, if we strive for perfection, then we'll be safe. Then we will belong. Then people will like us, right? Like, then no one can look at us and see that like there are things that we don't know, or that, you know, that we mess up sometimes, or then we'll be safe. And perfection sometimes, you know, can kind of take the reins for a while, and we can kind of try to maintain that mask, but it's not real. It's never something that we're actually going to achieve. And so what it can feed into is then the other parts of us, like guilt or shame, that are just like, look at all these failures. Like, look at all these ways that you're trying and it's still not working. Right. And so if perfectionism is the part of us that's really trying to protect our anxiety, right? That's afraid of bad things happening, right, to ourselves or those that we love. What are some ways that you see from all of the parents that you talk to every single day through Feeding Littles? What are some of the ways in which this protector part is blocking them from, you know, probably inevitably at the end of the day, what they want is for their child to be happy and healthy and for them to be present with their kid, you know? Yeah. Like, if that's what perfectionism is trying to protect, but obviously is doing it in ways that is just like feeding the cycle of like shame or guilt, what are some examples of how that's showing up for the parents that you're seeing?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I think a lot of people think that they're fully in control of their child's eating habits, and that if they just do it right from the very beginning, their kid will not be picky and they will eat only quote unquote healthy foods. Uh-huh. I even was victim to that a little bit when I was a new mom. I had so much anxiety around doing everything right. And the online landscape now is so much more intense than it was 11 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So much more. I actually feel I still work with brand new moms all the time. And I talk to them and I'm like, unfollow anything that's making you feel bad. Unfollow anything that's really rigid or absolutist. That's not what parenting is. Every child is different. There are guidelines that are helpful, but you still have to go with your instinct and you still have to adjust this to your child. And what makes me so sad is there are accounts online that will literally say, if you do all these things and you do it perfectly, you are going to prevent picky eating. You're not going to have a picky eater. And it's not true.
Yeah. Yep.
We're talking
Say it louder about, for those in the back. Yeah.
Yep, we're talking about reduction of risk. We're talking about they might not be as picky, but most kids go through picky phases.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids have things that are so out of their parents' control that they would never know how to help that cause some pretty significant picky eating, like literally to the point where these kids are eating like five foods only. Mm-hmm. If it's a sensory issue or if they're a chewing or oral motor issue, mm-hmm. You do not have the tools most likely in your toolbox to fix that by yourself.
Yeah.
But our world tells us that it's your fault because you must have messed up in how you introduced solids to them or how you fed them as a toddler. Also, here's the thing, guys. Once your kid goes out into the world, they're going to be exposed to a lot more than you have at home. Mm-hmm. And I love the kind of like idealism that sometimes people have when they have like a 2 or 3 year old, and they're like, they've never seen sugar. They've never had this. They've never had this.
Yeah.
And it changes so rapidly the second they go to preschool or birthday parties or play dates or anything like that. You know, the thing that's so cool about intuitive eating, and which is essentially kind of getting back to the roots of listening to your body, is that it allows for imperfection. It allows gray area of eating.
It does. And it creates this sort of exposure and comfort and more comfort with the gray area, which somebody yes. who lives with perfectionism, jumping in the driver's seat often, that, are you kidding me? Gray area? Like, no, thank you. That is not,
exactly
that is not what I'm comfortable with. But the relief that I felt with my third when I was given the language and then doing the work myself around this idea that she is, and telling her, you are the only one in your body that knows if you are full, if you like the way that tastes,
yeah.
if you are hungry, if you want more or you right. don't. You're the only one in your body that knows that. And right. like the I think initially no it was like ugh, but like you don't so but if I tell her that all she's gonna say she wants all day is cookies, right? Like that's what she's gonna say. And but then just sort of the exposure of like, wait, actually that is actually a aligned belief that I have, and like I want her with this moment, I want her to then build in that belief that she can trust herself,
right.
so that, you know, gosh, one day when she's at a party and someone's like saying, do this, we're doing this thing, you should do this thing, and something in herself is saying, I don't want to, or I don't want right. any more of that, or I'm done with this, I want her to trust that voice, you know. And so like right. just making that like that connection was like, okay, this is, even though I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to bring that discomfort with me, and I'm going to trust this process and trust her, right? And right. as she's learning her body. And what came with it was relief. I think that right. part of me, that perfectionist part, got to be like, oh, so you don't actually need me here? I get to go like take a nap in the back. And I'm like, by all means, you've been working so hard for so long, this part of me, yeah. like go take a nap. And there was eventually some relief. But initially there was tension. And then I had to get back to like, what is the meaning of this? Like, what is the value connected to taking this step and doing this a little bit differently and working on this for myself? And if I keep that value in mind as my GPS, right, when those like parts of me that start to freak out about doing this new thing with meals and trusting my kid and just introducing things, and all of a sudden I'm on a path that actually feels a lot more aligned. And those parts of me begin to trust the process a little bit more.
Yes, I love that.
Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say, I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, they have a product you can personalize. I have been using Artifact Uprising for years now. Every year for holiday cards, and every 2 years, I create a lay flat album with the ultra thick pages and their foil stamped covers to capture our memories from those past 2 years. When they first came out with their lay flat photo albums, I went back in time and started with our wedding. I am now on volume 6, capturing everyday moments, the big events, the trips, the births, all the things. These albums are my most cherished item in my home. Just last night, my parents came over and the kids really enjoyed sharing the most recent volume with them. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, Holding Space listeners can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you have purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code Dr. Cassidy through December 31st.
And that's, I think, where your own healing can come into this too. And I'm not, you know, you and I haven't talked a ton about like our own, you know, histories with food,
yeah.
But I know there's a lot of people listening who feel like they can't trust their own bodies.
Mm. Yeah.
And it is hard to trust our kids when we feel like we don't have that within ourselves. Yeah. A lot of times those messages got messed up somewhere along the way. We were told to finish our food. There's starving children somewhere. So thus it makes sense that we have to finish everything on our plate. It's all done with good intention, but if you think it through, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And our parents were told this, you know, by their parents and their parents. Everyone was, you know, a lot of people lived through really like food insecurity and really scary stuff. But when we tell kids to eat beyond their fullness cues, we are literally teaching them to stop listening to those, their signals in their body. And yes, of course, there's guidelines everywhere about kids need about this, or but they're all estimates. There are days when you and I don't eat that much. There's days when we want way more food than normal. And you said it perfectly. Only you know how your body feels with this. I did want to speak to something that you had mentioned that I thought was powerful, that living in that gray space and how it's really hard for perfectionists to kind of let go of not just how much and, you know, if our kid eats something, but the types of foods our kids eat. Mm-hmm. Part of intuitive eating is kind of allowing all foods to fit. And I think a lot of people think that means go hog wild on chips and cupcakes and nutrition doesn't matter. And you should just literally eat stuff because you can. It's literally designed to help you feel more neutral about food in your mind so that you can make decisions based on what your body feels and not what you're told to eat. That's the distinction. It's not about ignoring your body. It's not about ignoring health. It's not about giving up on treating your body a certain way. It's letting food not be so good or bad so that it doesn't have this pull on you when you're not allowed to have it. And it's saying I can have it if I want. And then seeing how much of that food you actually want to eat because you finally let yourself have it. What's wild is intuitive eating actually leads to better eating habits. Because people are not so caught up in this restrictive cycle where they, as Michelle Mace uses this term, it's like eat, repent, repeat.
Mm. Oh repeat my gosh.
Over and over and over again. So many people are stuck in that. And instead, if they actually let them have the cookie they really wanted, instead of eating the apple and the cheese and the piece of chocolate and six other, you know, things before they get to the cookie and then they have like 8 cookies, what if they just had 1 or 2 cookies and they felt satisfied and they felt good because it was allowed. And then they could actually move on from their day. That's the freedom of intuitive eating. That's what I love to teach parents. That's why you put the dessert sometimes in the lunchbox.
Yes.
And it's not this like coveted off limits thing. You're actually taking that, like those labels off those foods and you're letting kids listen to their bodies. Do they love the taste of cookies and chips and stuff. Yes, most people do. Those are
same. Yeah, me too.
Right, so why? But when we allow kids to have those more fun foods, we're not giving up on nutrition. We're not accepting the fate of, you know, all of these horrors people talk about, you know, our culture with food. We're literally allowing our children to have access to all sorts of foods so that they don't put something on a pedestal and see it as off limits. That's right. What it is.
Right. Or something that they then should be punished for, like yes. punish their body for, or yes. that is a reward for something, yep. right? Like
they earned it or that they deserve it only because they did something. Right. We have so many weird messages we give our kids about food and ourselves about food. And to just take a lot of those away is really freeing. And, you know, people will say to me all the time, I'm so sorry, I'm giving them chips. I'm like, I don't care. They're not eating chips all the time.
Yeah.
They eat chips. I don't want them standing there at the party looking at all the other kids eating chips and they're looking at me. I'm like, no, we can't have those. Obviously, allergies and stuff are a different story, but like, I want them to feel normal around food in a social situation. And I know what they get at home. We get balanced foods and we have ice cream sometimes too. And like, that balance is so freeing. I guess what my point is this: if you are a recovering perfectionist, know that that balance, that gray area, when it comes to food is actually healthy for your child to model. It's healthy for them to see food is not black and white. It's good for you to sometimes have cookies and you know, whatever food, French fries and whatever, because you're teaching them that all foods can fit.
Yes.
We don't want perfectionism with food. Perfectionism with food actually leads to disordered eating.
Yes.
It's not supposed to be like that.
I know. No.
Because there's a day when you're going to go out to the restaurant and there is, you know, you don't have full control over what you're going to eat. And sometimes you're going to choose to eat the burger and fries and a milkshake. And that's amazing. And I hope you enjoy it. And I hope it feels good on your body.
Yeah. 100%. So you mentioned the lunchbox.
Yes.
When I started being asked to send my child to school and then to send my child to school with food and there were some like restrictions, right, on like what you could send. But I also, there was also this part of me, this, you know, my oldest is 13. So this was, you know, like a decade ago-ish. But the thought that someone else is going to see what I'm packing for her and her lunch, you know, and feeling a lot of pressure and like, and stressing about it. I mean, it was a thing where I had to pass that like torch to my husband and be like, I can't pack lunches anymore because they stress me out. Like looking in the fridge before, like, what are we going to have for tomorrow? Like, are they going to eat this stuff? Like, is it going to stay good? Like, it just, it was stressful to me. And you just came out with a book and I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about lunches because folks are going back to school right now, and I'm thinking about the mom who, like me a decade-ish ago, is packing lunches for the first time and is really struggling with knowing how to do this in a way that doesn't just keep her in this like little spiral of perfectionism and anxiety. And so talk to us about lunches, and then let's talk a little bit about what your book offers here.
Oh my gosh, that does make me really sad that that's how you felt. I hope that parents don't feel like they're being judged for the – I know they are. I know that that is a real thing. I know that sometimes notes come home. And we actually have an interesting section in our book about – it's for teachers and lunchroom staff who have an incredibly difficult job.
Yes.
They're managing so many different types of kids and so many different types of parents. And a lot of – like, for example – preschool teachers that are in the classroom, some parents will literally tell them, please make sure that they eat everything in their lunchbox. Please make them eat everything. That is a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure. Of course, it's coming from a place of fear because they think that their kid might not eat anything if nobody's pressuring them, right? Mm. And then there's these other parents that are, you know, wanting to pack certain things, and maybe they're getting told like you can't, you know, some preschools will say you can't put chocolate or candy or anything in their lunch. Right? And that can be really hard, or they'll tell the kid, you must eat all of your growing foods before you have all of your fun, any of your fun foods. a strain for a kid who normally doesn't see foods in that way, right? And parents that don't want that for their child. So it is tricky. This is tricky. And I just hope, first and foremost, like, thank you, teachers, and thank you, lunchroom staff, because your job is something I would never want to do when it comes to lunch, and you are freaking angels.
Yes.
I want to reassure parents that it is normal for kids to not eat their lunch at school. It is normal. No matter what food you send, there are some days where they're not going to eat. And now that you've been through this for 13 years, you know that sometimes that lunchbox comes back completely full and you're like, what the heck? You picked this. You loved this. Yeah. Why didn't you eat? It doesn't have anything to do with the food. The lunch school experience is so multifaceted. There are, if you think about it, remember like all the social stuff from school, you're dealing with wanting to see a friend that's in another class and you haven't seen them all day, or you're maybe dealing with drama or even bullying. Or, you know, you open up your lunch and somebody makes fun of it. Or there's just so many things. There's so many things that are involved. And it's not necessarily a reflection of like what you packed. If your kid ate everything or didn't eat everything, it's not like, oh, you're a good mom or you're a bad mom. It's independent of that. Mm. And it's oftentimes totally out of your control. So what we do with parents is we reassure them first and foremost that expect food to come home. Definitely have a really good snack. And this is actually sometimes when kids will reopen their lunchbox as long as the food stays safe. Like if there were perishable things in there, as long as it's still cold when they're done with school, a lot of times they'll eat it then.
Yeah.
Kinda like lunch number two. follow the formula that we talk about in the book will help you build a balanced lunch and know that you're giving them that variety and exposure, even if they're not necessarily eating it yet. So that involves a starch or carbohydrate food, those like beige foods that our kids tend to love. Most of us love too. That's, you know, an energy food. So oftentimes your kid will go for that first. That's like, you know, the pita bread or the pasta that you put in there, whatever, the chips, whatever that, you know, they're really excited
about.
Bagel.
Yeah.
Bagel. Yeah. And then a protein is important as well. Again, might not eat it, but try to serve it if you can. Remember that you can use cold foods like leftover meatballs, like that don't have sauce on there. That's, my kids literally pop those suckers in their mouth. They're fully cooked. They're just refrigerated. And that's a great option. You could do, you know, obviously like sunflower seed butter has protein in it, hard boiled eggs, you know, beans, hummus, you know, leftover chicken. There's so many options for that. And then you want to do a fruit and a vegetable. And a lot of people will say, well, why? My kid doesn't eat vegetables. The only way kids learn how to eat foods is through consistent exposure.
Exposure.
And I know it's annoying. And I literally say, we'll just put one piece of cucumber in there. You don't have to do the whole cucumber.
Thank
just
goodness for cucumbers. You know, they come in and save the day. Like, that's the one.
That's a content piece, man. Cucumbers really are that, like, that hearty vegetable that kids tend to go for, even if they're not going for the other ones.
Yeah.
They don't get credit. You're right. But a lot of people just kind of give up. They give up on doing those foods, and they tend to eat them with more exposure and seeing them and learning to expect them in their lunchbox. And then it fills one of those little holes because all these lunchboxes have so many compartments.
So many freaking little holes.
So if you're doing a carb, a protein, a fruit, a vegetable, then we say if there's room, if you want to, you can do a dessert, a dip or chip, you know, something extra. Sometimes people put two fruits if they've got more fruit or whatever. And it kind of helps you offer a well-rounded lunch. And then if they eat, you know, just one or two of the compartments, at least they're getting a few different food groups. But it doesn't need to be, okay, guys, you don't need to like color coordinate your lunch. You don't need to do rainbows. You don't need to do like googly eye or cutting out shapes. Or, I mean, I see these amazing lunches on online. That's actually where the book idea came from, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is what people are seeing. Like, yes, would my kid love a caterpillar like wrap sandwich? Yes, they would love that. I'm not making that for
No, I am not. I mean, I think that the context of that is really important to name here, right? Like, we didn't just come up with the idea of what we should, the should look like. Like, we've been exposed to these images, these curations, this idea of like what these like beautiful lunchboxes look like, you know? And I think that we got to give the digital space some credit here that like a lot of people are coming in and trying to give more of the unfiltered like version, right? Or, you know, gently tease some of these like, you know, perfect, really beautiful, elaborate like lunches. to kind of let folks know, like, hey, it doesn't have to look like this. But, you know, that model, that image is still in our mind. And what I loved about your book is there's one page, and like this is the image I want like burned in my memory instead of the other ones. There's this one image in there where it's like there's like four or five different foods, but like it's just each day, it's just like in each lunchbox, it's just a different version of like this like mixture, right? Where you're just like replacing one thing, and it's I'm like, I have all those things in my fridge right now. Like this is realistic. Like and it actually looks a little bit more like what I kind of feel like I would naturally do. And the fact that you took a photo of it and put it in a book and you're telling me this is like this is a balanced lunch, right? I'm like, oh, okay. I'm already kind of doing it, and that's a little boost. And you address all the other issues that can come up, that because, you know, for instance, I do worry about protein. Right. Protein is like the bane of my existence when it comes to lunches. Cause I'm like, how do I keep it so it stays good? Like, what actually is going to taste good like hours from now in a lunchbox? And just the fact that you cover these things in such a clear way and address things like, you know, the school lunch experience for your child, and it's, and like allergies and allergens and all these things, like, I'm like, this is what we needed. So thank you.
Well, I'm so glad you say that. Thank you. I think what we wanted to do was, this book is like one of a kind. It's not, there's no recipes. People kind of assumed that maybe it would be another cookbook. I don't want to cook for lunches. I am not making recipes. I don't know anyone else that wants to. So this is essentially like a coffee table book for your kitchen.
Yeah.
The idea is that it's a book that you leaf through, that you look through. It's an inspo book. And it's so funny to even convince people, you know, at the beginning when we wanted to get this published, like, I have this vision and I swear to you, it's going to be cool. I promise.
Yeah.
And it's giving parents permission to not do the fancy.
No fancy.
You don't have to do fancy. And honestly, the fancier, the more time you put into it, the less likely they are to eat it. Like,
right.
I would be so devastated if I made this like gorgeous, like colored weird. And I also want to just say something about a lot of those lunches. I see so many examples online of like this gorgeous curated lunchbox. Those actually would not stay fresh because they'll mix, like the sandwich has like a whole bunch of fruit like styled around it.
That lunchbox getting thrown around. Like it's
thrown around in the backpack. Like even if it's secure in the box, that compartment's getting shaken up, right?
Yeah.
So in the book, we were really careful to not like model things in a way that would be so unrealistic. Like, you're putting the raspberries in this section and they're separated from the cucumbers because the juice of them will get everywhere. I'm not making it look just pretty just for the sake of looking pretty. That's going to be unrealistic.
Right.
So I think it gives parents permission and it takes off the mental load, which I think is one of the biggest benefits because it does get, I mean, I get sick of packing lunches. I also get sometimes a little in a rut and I'll pull the book out. My kids will be like, isn't this your book? Why haven't you given us this recently? You know, but it helps me with shopping. It helps me have, it's all visual. It's all, you know, every single page has a picture, a full size picture. And kids, I mean, we get these messages. Kids are literally hiding the book in their room from their parents because they want to look through it.
Oh, and my 4-year-old, when I got it, we looked through it together and she showed me the ones that she liked. And then she showed me the ones that she didn't like, you know, and I was like, got it, you know, noted. I might still do it because we're exposing here, but like it was like she and like we had so much fun.
Yeah,
we had so much fun looking through it together.
It's so different than, you know, anything that's out there because it's meant to be a tool to use with your child. It's not just a book to have and collect dust on your, you know, shelf. It's meant to be something that you actually go through and use. And the moment you're starting to feel that itch of like, oh, I don't like this anymore. I'm running out of ideas. I don't know what to do. You pull it out and you're like, okay, let's make a list for our groceries, you know, grocery haul this week. Let's get something new in there. And it's not complicated. Like we talk about like, you know, even build your own soft tacos. My favorite idea in there is the build your own nacho cups with the like little tortilla boats, you know, those little That one, when I send that with my kids to school, I get harassed by all my friends. What was in that? My kid keeps talking about it. And I'm like, well, it's coming out in this book that you're going to be able to get soon. But that's something that, like, you know, it's easy. It's like literally scoops of tortilla, salsa. That's the vegetable, by the way.
Yeah.
you know, ground beef that you had left over that you just put right. in the lunchbox and kept in the fridge till you had to send it to school with some ice packs, cheese, maybe sour cream or guacamole, and then maybe like a fruit somewhere in there too, not for the, you know, not to load, but then they literally get a spoon and they load them up and they eat these little nachos, or they kind of just mix it all together and eat it however they want. And it's different. You didn't have to put in a ton of effort. It's balanced. And now they had something kind of interesting for lunch that was different than
incredible. Your day-to-day. And you know what? I would then make that for myself for lunch too. Like yes. I would eat that. So that's perfect.
We have a lot of clients that don't have kids that are getting the book. They're like, this is going to be my dinner inspo book. Yes. I mean, it's kind of like the ultimate, I can't even book for dinners because it's not, it's a no cookbook.
Yeah. That is my sort of cookbook. Absolutely. So Megan, you're amazing. This has been amazing. I would love to send all the Holding Space listeners to you and to this book. So where can folks find you and where can they buy the book?
Thank you. So we're at feedinglittles.com. There's a link there to purchase from all the different retailers. You know, definitely hit up your small shop if you can, but we obviously are on Target, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And then you can find us mainly on Instagram. That's our preferred platform. It's at Feeding Littles.
Amazing. I'm going to link all of that in the show notes so the listener can head straight there. Oh, what a relief. Like you are a relief. Thank you for bringing relief to all of us parents. I so appreciate you. Thanks so much for coming on, Megan.
Thank you. It was nice to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.